Welcome to the Dope Dive. Today, we're jumping straight into, well, a really complex topic, the evolving economic dance between the U.S. and China. We're leaning on insights from Jeff Bernard, who's analyzed a recent report from The Economist. It gives us a look at where things stand right now in May 2025.
And it's definitely evolved, hasn't it, from those initial back-and-forth tariffs we all remember. What Bernard highlights, looking at The Economist piece, is that we're now in less of an open conflict, maybe, and more of a tense stalemate. It feels more dug in.
Exactly, stalemate. And it's interesting, China's own Ministry of Foreign Affairs apparently called it the eye of the storm. That suggests, a kind of deceptive quiet with a lot bubbling underneath.
Hmm.
So our mission today is really to get a handle on these current dynamics. What are the economic risks, especially for the U.S., and how does this all fit globally? Plus, there's this intriguing idea from The Economist, via Bernard, that China might actually hold a subtle but significant advantage right now.
Yes, that's a fascinating angle. And Bernard's work is right there with The Economist reporting. We've also got some extra context on China's manufacturing power and just, well, the generally turbulent global economic scene.
Okay, so let's try to unpack this current phase, the stalemate. We're past the first wave of tariffs. What are the risks now? Maybe the less obvious ones.
Yeah, the risks are definitely layered now. Bernard's analysis, pulling from The Economist, it points beyond just the tariffs themselves. We're looking at the potential for ongoing disruptions to supply chains. Global ones.
Right.
Think about how much industries rely on specific parts mm-hmm. or materials. That flow could get really unpredictable.
Okay.
Then there's inflation, still an issue. Yeah. Even without brand new tariffs, the existing barriers, they can keep costs up.
Mm-hmm.
And just the overall uncertainty, it puts a damper on global growth. Businesses get hesitant. They don't want to invest or expand when things feel shaky.
And it sounds like neither the U.S. nor China is really looking to back down easily. Bernard mentions these deeply entrenched positions. What does that signal?
Well, it suggests the disagreements are fundamental. It's probably not just about trade deficits anymore. It likely goes into things like technology development, intellectual property rules,
mm-hmm.
basically the rules of the game for innovation, and maybe even bigger geopolitical goals.
Mm-hmm.
When you're arguing about those core things, finding a quick fix is, well, much harder. So these economic headwinds could stick around.
Okay, now this is a point from Bernard's analysis of The Economist that really stood out. It might make some people sit up. He mentions an impending mighty economic shock for America. That sounds pretty serious.
It does. It's a strong warning. Now, we should be clear, the excerpt we have doesn't spell out the exact nature or timing of this shock.
Right.
But the fact that The Economist is flagging this possibility and Bernard is highlighting it, that's significant, mm-hmm. especially given how jittery the global economy already feels. This U.S.-China tension isn't happening in a vacuum. It's a really big factor in all that global instability.
So playing this out, if this mighty shock did happen, what might that actually look like? How would we feel it?
Bernard's analysis touches on a few vulnerable spots. Financial markets, for one. We know they react sometimes strongly to geopolitical tensions.
Yeah.
Ongoing trade friction just amps that up. It could lead to what they call heightened volatility, bigger, faster swings in stock prices, things like that.
Okay.
We might also see international trade relationships continue to shift. Countries looking for other partners. That could make the whole global system less efficient, maybe, as new blocs form and protectionism spreads.
Makes sense.
Even currency trading gets complicated. The yuan, the U.S. dollar, their values fluctuating adds another layer of risk. And of course, regions or countries really dependent on trade with either the U.S. or China could face their own economic instability. Big ripple effects.
Let's pivot to China's side for a moment. The analysis suggests this subtle but significant advantage. But as you said, the reasons why aren't fully detailed. What factors might give them an edge based on what else we know?
Right, The Economist report, as Bernard sees it, doesn't lay out a checklist. But our other info about China's manufacturing strength gives us some clues.
Yeah.
Their economic system, with significant state involvement, might let them absorb short-term economic pain better than a purely market-driven one, like having a bigger shock absorber.
Interesting.
And their huge domestic market is definitely a factor.
Yeah.
It provides a cushion if export demand dips in one place.
Sure.
Plus, they've been actively building trade ties and strategic alliances elsewhere. That could also be strengthening their hand overall.
That makes sense, yeah. Big internal buffer. Okay, back to this potential mighty economic shock for the U.S. Beyond just general instability, what could actually trigger or worsen a shock like that, given the trade dynamics and China's strengths?
Well, we have to look at the direct impact of tariffs, right?
Yeah.
Which often mean higher prices for American consumers, higher costs for businesses.
Mm-hmm.
That can dampen investment.
Yeah.
And U.S. supply chains are often deeply tied to Chinese manufacturing. So any major disruption there, whether from trade policy or something else, can cause real bottlenecks, shortages across the U.S. economy.
Right, the ripple effect again.
Exactly. And these trade tensions can also sort of aggravate existing weaknesses in the U.S. economy, making it more vulnerable if some other shock hits.
There's been talk of decoupling the U.S. and Chinese economies, moving apart, shown by lower trade volumes. What are the longer-term implications if that keeps happening? What does decoupling actually mean in practice?
A serious decoupling would be a massive shift, huge consequences. For businesses, it probably means rethinking their supply chains completely. That's costly, complex. It could lead to higher production costs and maybe higher prices for us.
Okay.
On a bigger scale, it could slow down tech collaboration, maybe innovation in some areas. Ultimately, some analysts worry it could lead to a more fragmented world economy, sort of like separate economic zones with different rules.
Mm.
That probably wouldn't be great for overall global growth. And as The Economist points out, this isn't just tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
It's also about who leads in technology, who protects ideas, intellectual property, and who has more global influence.
And this whole U.S.-China thing isn't happening in a bubble, right?
Right.
Our other sources mention a whole bunch of other global factors making the economic picture volatile.
Oh, absolutely. It's a complex mix. You've got the economic effects of the war in Ukraine rippling through energy markets and adding to instability everywhere.
Yeah.
Interestingly, all this uncertainty can actually create weird opportunities in currency trading markets, paradoxical almost. Then there's Saudi Arabia's role in OPEC. Oil production decisions, always a big factor for energy prices.
Mm.
Even things like the U.S.-Britain trade deal can subtly change old alliances.
Right.
And trends like more regular investors getting into private assets, what's happening in mortgage markets, consolidation in Italian banking, showing efforts for stability in Europe.
Mm.
It all connects. It is. Plus broader things like the economic pressures on Generation X or how Asian insurance firms might be vulnerable to U.S. policy changes, even the fact that academics are increasingly studying, you know, historical examples of powerful nations declining, it suggests a feeling that we might be in a big transitional period globally.
So to really understand China's potential advantage, we need to look wider than just trade numbers. The detailed source material digs deeper into their strengths. Let's touch on some of those.
Yes, definitely. China's perceived edge isn't just one thing, it's a combination. Their sheer economic size is huge, obviously. Plus their massive manufacturing base and all the infrastructure they've built. That's a powerful foundation. Huge production power, huge internal market. That gives resilience.
Okay.
Then there's their trade position. They're central to so many global supply chains. And their influence is growing, especially in developing countries, partly through things like the Belt and Road Initiative. That gives them real leverage.
And it's moved beyond just making things, hasn't it? Technology seems key now.
Absolutely critical. They've poured money into R&D, making big strides in AI, 5G, renewables. They've built a digital infrastructure to support it. And the state is heavily involved in funding and directing tech development in areas they see as strategic.
What about financially on the world stage?
Well, they hold enormous foreign exchange reserves. That's a big safety net. Their currency, the renminbi, is slowly gaining more international use. And they're developing their own payment systems, which could, you know, reduce reliance on Western financial networks over time.
Hmm.
Plus, their ability to direct state-backed investment into big projects, infrastructure, key industries, it's vast.
And resources, raw materials.
Yes, that's another big piece. They dominate the mining and processing of rare earth minerals, essential for loads of high-tech stuff. That's significant strategic leverage right there.
Hmm.
They're also strong in processing other raw materials and to build global partnerships to secure resource supplies. It's about long-term security.
It really is a comprehensive picture. Economic scale, trade power, tech advancements, financial muscle, resource control, and then the geopolitical aspect on top.
Exactly. Things like the Belt and Road Initiative show that ambition to expand global reach, their diplomacy, their strategic partnerships, they're working to shape international norms, institutions, and kind of underlying it all is this capacity for long-term strategic planning, a consistent state-directed approach that's maybe harder to maintain in countries with shorter political cycles.
Okay, so let's try to bring it all together. What are the main takeaways from this deep dive, thinking about Bernard's analysis of The Economist and everything else we've discussed for May 2025?
Well, I think the core picture is a trade war that's morphed into this tense, possibly long-term stalemate. And that carries real risks for the global economy's health. The analysis clearly flags the potential for a significant economic shock, particularly for the U.S. And meanwhile, China seems to hold this nuanced but important strategic advantage built on a really wide range of economic and political strengths.
Right.
And crucially, none of this is happening alone. It's all woven into this bigger tapestry of global economic volatility and what looks like a real shift in the global power balance.
It's incredibly complex, deeply interconnected, definitely gives you a lot to chew on for the future. And on that note, here's something final for you, the listener, to think about. Given how tangled the global economy is, how might this kind of predicted economic turbulence in a huge player like the U.S. actually ripple out? How could it affect seemingly unrelated parts of your own work or even your personal life? And looking ahead, what kinds of long-term adjustments might people or businesses need to start considering in this changing landscape of U.S.-China relations? And the global economic order. Definitely something to ponder. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.